Welcome back to Don't Call It a Book Club. My name is Luke.
My name is Dan.
Today, we have finished The Tainted Cup. We drank all of it.
Delicious.
We're tainted, officially.
Hopefully it vaccinated us from something.
Yeah. we're going to be talking about the ending. Make sure you finish the book.
Yep.
But I think we have a little bit of a warm up to do.
Luke, I've got a promise to keep.
Yes.
All right. I'm going to bring my webcam closer over here so you can get a visual. Hang on.
Okay, good.
Come on.
This is good podcast content. There it is.
Okay, Luke.
Oh,
we've got some brownies.
Those brownies, I see.
All right. Now, I'm going to just give Luke a little visual. So there's a clear visual difference. I wanted to try and do a blind taste test, but
yeah.
They are very different in appearance. Okay.
Okay. So, there's four brownie squares
yep.
on a plate.
Yep.
the visual difference, I can see some visual difference. It's kind of hard to tell over the webcam.
Yeah.
But apparently there's a big visual difference and a glass of milk, which I'm very excited.
Gotta have a glass of milk.
This
is actually soy milk. Okay.
Soy milk. Okay. Interesting.
So we're going to see how that goes. I will say, for the sake of this experiment, I bought on the cheaper end of boxed brownies. Okay.
Okay. Wait, actually, can I pause you for a second?
Yeah.
Because I want to give some background just in case anyone is tuning in without hearing.
What are you talking about? Who would do that?
A couple episodes ago, we decided that Dan needed to test out boxed brownies versus homemade brownies to see if there's a benefit to to making from scratch.
Yeah.
Okay. Now continue.
Okay. So cheaper boxed brownie, and I found a recipe. I think it's the recipe that Torridon actually linked on the Discord.
Okay.
I will say, when you actually make it yourself, you realize how much sugar goes in to brownies.
Yes.
So much, Luke. It's mostly sugar. I will also say I have not tried these yet. So I made them earlier today. I made them both within an hour of each other. Okay. So these brownies were coming out the oven around the same, within the same hour. Okay.
Okay. Good. You're taking weather out of the equation.
Yes, exactly. I'm trying to remove as many variables as possible. Otherwise, I followed the instructions on the package.
Okay.
Visually, when I'm looking at them, so the boxed brownies, it's clear for me to tell, by the way, which is which. Boxed brownies.
Okay, so we're not doing a blind study here.
It would be impossible for me to do a blind study, unfortunately. Visually, the boxed brownies have a much more clear sort of crackly top, like it's shiny on the top. The scratch brownies, still a little shiny on the top, but not like a sheet of shine on them, if that makes sense. Not like a flat surface that's crackling. It's more solid. Brownies that I made from scratch also holding up a lot better. These are denser beasts.
Okay.
I think I'm just gonna go for one of them, Luke. Which one do I go for first is the question.
Give me boxed first.
Okay, boxed first. Here we go. Boxed first. And I've got an edge and a middle. So
what's temp
comparison.
Right now? They're
these are room
cooled
temp.
Down, right?
These are room temp.
Room temp.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
Okay.
It's a good looking bite.
Mm-hmm. Very chewy. Okay. The chocolate factor is really good.
Yep. Yeah. Take a sip of milk. Got to get the full experience.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, yeah. Mm-hmm. So definitely the bottom of it is a lot chewier than the other parts, right? Like the bottom is pretty chewy. I'm going to get another bite just because. Oh,
yeah.
Damn, brownies are fucking good.
Brownies are really good, yeah.
Okay. I mean, it's good. It's like the brownies that I remember, you know?
Yeah, of course.
It's chocolatey. It's chewy. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Need another sip.
Did you go for a full-time recommended? I like an undercooked brownie.
Well, I mean, I was using the toothpick test, Luke, and I will say that during my toothpick test, it actually had to go a little bit longer than the box requested.
Okay.
But still good. I think that's still a properly cooked brownie.
It's a good brownie. All right.
Okay. We're going homemade brownie now. This could be the first time homemade. I've ever eaten a homemade brownie. So we're going to see how it is.
I'm really excited.
And I have not eaten these before. These are like, I didn't have any. I exhibited restraint this afternoon and I didn't have one.
Of course.
Because I wanted to do it live on air for you, the listener.
I'm thankful and proud of you for that.
Thank you. Okay. Here we go. Oh.
Oh, those do look very well formed.
Mmm. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Wait, before you say anything, you have to take a sip of milk because mm-hmm. that's, you got to be consistent here.
Okay. Wow. Okay, I will say, not as chewy as the box brownie. But then that could have something. I didn't standardize the number of stirs I did on the batter. So that could have played a factor here.
You're being too good of a scientist.
Not as chewy, a lot more chocolatey.
You're doing the scientist thing where we're very uncomfortable making strong statements.
Correct. The chocolate is coming through a lot more on this guy.
Okay.
I'll also say it's denser than the box brownie.
Sure. Denser, but not chewier.
Mm-hmm. Well, when I get an edge piece, it gets that chewy going on. Like when I get right on the edge. But I think the chewiness penetrates the less deep into the brownie, if that makes sense.
Okay, sure.
Mm-hmm. Okay, now here's the thing. Here's what I'm going to do, Luke.
Yeah.
I've got these two. I'm going to close my eyes. Okay? And I'm going to try to the best of my ability to like identify, to quantify the difference between these two. Does that make sense? Because
Wait, before you do this, because I feel like, do you have a preference between the two before you try to quantify it?
Okay, here's the problem, Luke. I cooked these. I feel like
you have too much spiritual attachment to the scratch made one.
Yes, the fact that I spent more time preparing the scratch made one.
Yeah.
I'm naturally going to be like, well, it must taste better, right? I spent like, you know, granted, I didn't even spend that much longer. It took maybe 5 minutes longer than the box brownie.
Right.
Okay. I'm going to close my eyes and try and just not think about which is which now and quantify difference here. Okay. Because our hypothesis, Luke, was that box brownies are good enough. We don't need to scratch make them. Okay. So let me try to just bite one, bite the other, quantify difference. Hold on.
Okay.
Sip of milk.
Again, this is just great content.
Okay. Okay, here's the thing. Sip of milk. Here's the thing, Luke. I think the scratch made brownies, let's put it on a 10-point scale. Okay.
Okay.
Box brownie. If we say classic box brownie is a 5, like just like where it's at.
Okay. That's not a definition, not a,
that's a definition, not a value. Yeah, exactly. I would say my scratch brownies for me are like a 7.
Okay.
So I do prefer them. Okay, but they're not that different. I'm going to say a couple of things here, though. The first is I had to have like more ingredients. Like I had to go get a few other things to make the scratch brownies. Okay.
Right.
But not that many.
Right, because most of the, like you have on hand, probably usually sugar, flour, maybe cocoa powder?
I had to buy cocoa powder. That was really the only...
Does it need eggs?
Yep. Because the thing about the box brownie... For the box brownie, I was comparing ingredients actually earlier today. The box brownie is just the stuff you put in homemade brownies packaged,
right,
pre-measured.
Right.
Now, the box brownies I was using also had baking soda in there, so I think it makes it... That's why it's not as dense. Like, there's a little bit of lift to it.
Sure.
But otherwise, it's just the same stuff. It's just, they just separated the dry ingredients. here.
What I'm hearing you say, and I think the takeaway is that functionally it's the same and mm-hmm. good enough.
Mm-hmm.
But from a like mental experience wise, mm-hmm. because you've made it, maybe the scratch brownies are better and get that boost.
Yes, I agree.
Okay.
I also think, Luke, you know, when you get a box brownie, it comes in like a plastic bag and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But if you already have the ingredients to make brownies at your house, which most of you listening right now probably do, honestly, doesn't take that much more effort.
Okay.
So okay. I'm going to do this for our listeners here. Okay. If you don't want to look up a recipe, box brownies, very similar in experience to homemade scratch brownies. However, if you don't want to have to go to the store to buy a box of brownies, I've got good news for you. You probably have the stuff to make brownies already.
Very good.
You are okay. going to have to take a little bit of psychic damage, though, because the amount of sugar in these is like twice as much flour as there is sugar.
Oh, really?
It's so much sugar, Luke. I put in like 3/4 cup flour and it's like 2 cups sugar.
Okay.
It's
okay.
A lot. Okay.
Very good.
It's good. It's a lot of sugar and you have to witness it. Whereas when it comes from a box, you don't know what the dry stuff is.
But the milk cuts that. So it actually is fine. That's what the milk's there for.
Mm. I could really use some like vanilla ice cream right now.
Oh God. Again, my take that I stand by from a while ago is that often desserts don't also need ice cream.
Yeah, but brownie with vanilla ice cream, Luke?
I just don't know.
All right, I'm going to finish this last bite. It's good stuff.
You're okay.
Luke, I'll box these leftovers up and send them to you. Don't worry.
Yeah, shoot them my way. Mm-hmm. We can repeat this.
Okay, should we talk book, Luke?
Okay, yeah, that's a great transition, I think. Into talking about other things that we like to eat, which we see a lot of in this book. Okay. We're talking The Tainted Cup, the second half of it now.
Mm-hmm.
I have a small note on that I think is common in kind of like murder mysteries where the detective is like really good at stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I'm on board with most of it. I love it. I love the little deductions and things like that.
Yeah.
Every now and then there's one where I'm just like, I don't know.
Ooh, okay.
If you could have picked that.
Tell me about the reach. Tell me about the reach that Anna's doing.
The reach is there's a victim.
Yep.
I think it's the one. Yeah. It's the guy that was providing the fern paper or whatever it's called.
Yep.
The way that they find where he delivered it to
is
on his desk, he like writes hard and she was able to feel by touch which ones were the more recent orders.
Yeah.
Because they were like, and they do like a little rubbing thing.
Yep.
And that one was a stretch to me.
Oh, interesting. I don't know. I kind of liked it. I like the fact that they... Because here's why I liked it. She's been reading this way the whole time, right?
Yes, she does. She does read this way.
So from that aspect, her like tactile reading was really working for me. Now, are you saying the stretch was just that they were able to extract the most recent order from this?
Yes. That's the problem, I think.
Hmm.
Unless it's like a self-healing desk.
Yeah, but if you think of like... I think this actually makes sense. Because...
Okay.
If you think like a decade ago I wrote an order, I'm not just using that desk to write on, right? Like I'm also pressing down on it. I'm like putting other stuff on there. it's gonna dull the edges of that writing over time, right? Like, that makes sense to me.
Okay.
And if I wrote on it recently, I feel like that, I think it makes sense, Luke.
Okay, yeah, but I feel like you're thinking of it as like he writes an order down once a month or something like that.
Okay.
Which even that, I don't think it would check out, but if he's for sure writing orders down multiple times a day.
Maybe he's shitty at this job. Did we ever think about that? Maybe nobody hires this guy. Because this is a good point. This is also a little life tip here. If you ever need to conceal some writing that you have on a page, the best way to do it, not like scribble straight lines through it or little curly cues or whatever, write other letters over top. This is a great way to conceal what the original writing is, because it's impossible to tell which are the original letters you wrote. So like this comes up a lot if I am giving student feedback and I need to change the scores on somebody's assignment. If I'm like, oh, I messed that up. I'll just write a bunch of numbers over top of the existing number, and then there's no way to tell which is the original.
So sometimes students get back an assignment and they're just like a cluster of numbers.
Well, but then next to it is the actual number I want to give them. But sometimes I'll like either have been too generous or not generous enough, and I don't want them to know that I've changed it a little bit.
Okay. Okay. But it is clear that something weird happened.
Yeah, of course. Right there. Of course.
Yeah. I love that.
But anyway, let's bring it back to book. I think that this actually does make it way harder to interpret this desk, now that you mention it, because it's just, this is, okay, hold on.
Like, well, you would have to have a long time between writing, I think, for this to, for this to work.
Luke, here's what we're forgetting. Anna's trying to fuck over the Haases the whole time, right?
So you think that she just knew ahead of time?
Well, either she knew or she was like, I'm going to send him there. Ah, fuck him. Yeah. I'm just going to send him to the Haase house because I need to find out what's going on over there.
So you're saying like she did this little trick and then was like, oh, it's this address.
Yeah. Oh, actually, this is the deepest one. I can tell. It must be over in the landed gentry portion.
Yeah. Okay. I'm here for that. Yeah.
Especially, Luke, I don't think it's that far of a logical stretch either, considering the size of this order, right? Like, this order was so big that he had to get fern paper from his neighbor to fulfill it.
Mm-hmm.
Not a lot of places is going to be doing that kind of an order.
True. True. They end up just using the really fancy, like scent key or whatever it's called.
Mm-hmm.
And so they kind of just need to get close. And so maybe she was like, it's probably in the gentry. So just like go to that road and like try it out.
Just go wander around. They have two of these keys, right?
I think so.
I feel like this is an opportunity to just wander the city. The city can't be that big, right?
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And it's a fancy one. Like, don't try all the doors.
Right. Actually, wait a minute, Luke. Hold on. Did they really even need this information? They have one of the fanciest reagent keys of all time.
Right.
Did they need to know that the fern paper was delivered to the, like, gentry quarter for them to be like, maybe we should go check out those rich people's houses first?
This is true. This is true. Maybe this is like a legal thing where they're like, we know that it's one of the gentry houses, but we need like
a probable cause.
A probable cause to go search it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I do love throughout this section just the like smugness of Anna.
Yeah.
I mean, it's very Sherlock, right? But I don't care. I love it. I love it. Just how like she is willing to insult anybody. I think it's great. I love this character.
It is great. I think last episode I said that she was getting a little bit too quirky, and I think I actually am happy with the level of quirk that we end up with. I think I'm a big Anna fan in this second half too.
Yeah. Yeah. I have kind of a world question for you, Luke.
Okay.
So we encounter a ton of people in this book who have been augmented, right?
Yeah, like almost everyone.
Okay, great. This poses an important question that's like, where do all the babies come from? Because apparently it makes you sort of sterile to be augmented.
Right.
How are there still people being produced at rates to like keep up with the deaths? If like what I'm guessing is about 40% of our population are sterile based on this book.
Yeah, I don't know what the numbers are, but it does seem because like, okay, they talk about how basically to keep the empire alive, they need people to have these crazy sets of skills.
Yeah.
And so they have to be augmenting a lot of people.
It feels that way. Yeah.
I wonder if like, so we've only seen the outskirts, and the outskirts are like really where all of this is necessary.
Okay. Okay.
So like maybe all like every, like, out on the seawalls and the third wall and all these cantons or whatever they're called, everyone's augmented. But on the inside, it's a little bit more normal.
You're saying like the fourth son of a big family. They're like, all right, kid, you got to go out. There's too many of us here. You got to go out to the seawall.
Yeah.
They need you out there.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense to me, actually. And there'd be a lot less of them in the inner circles because it's, like, hopefully better there.
Right. Yeah, because okay. I don't know why the inner circles would be a bad. Like, the inner circles seem like they're probably kind of normal life.
Right. Yeah. The inner circles have to be, like, pretty dope, right?
Yeah.
Because, like, the only... They're not even really in danger of the Leviathans.
Yeah.
So, I feel like it's unfair. I feel like this is not a hot take at all. They should let them rotate in for a little bit. Do you know what I mean?
Like the people in the outskirts should get to spend a few years in the inner circle or something?
Yeah, let them rotate in. So they're like, oh, you guys don't really worry about the Leviathans in here, huh?
I have a theory, actually.
Ooh, Luke's got a theory. Okay.
That I only just now came up. Well, it's part of a note that I'm now transitioning into a theory.
Okay, let's hear your theory, Luke.
So, well, let me ask you this.
Yeah.
We hear about how big of a threat the Leviathans are.
Mm-hmm.
And like a couple times it's like, especially at the end, they're like, okay, we're going to see if the empire is going to survive.
Yeah.
And like, they just kind of kill it really quickly.
With like one shot.
The Leviathans seem like not that big of a threat to you.
Yeah.
Kind of, right?
So... Luke, what's your theory then? Because I have a theory about this.
Okay, my theory is basically that, like, the people on the inside have convinced the people on the outside that the Leviathans are this huge threat, and they're like, the entirety of the empire is focused on this.
Yes.
So that they don't actually look at how life is on the inside.
Yes. This is exactly my theory about this. Common enemy. We all have a common enemy. Don't look at us. We're just chilling, okay? We all need to look at the Leviathans. Those are the real bad guys, right? So keep looking right. That way. Don't look this way. No. Don't look over here. Don't look over here. Keep an eye out for those Leviathans. They're coming for us, you know? And we appreciate
the reason that
you.
We haven't the reason that we haven't spent a lot of resources to get your life better is actually because we are spending all of those resources on preventing Leviathans.
Right. Did you see that big gun we made? That took a lot of money. We sent it all. We sent all the money we have.
Right. Listen, we don't have more money to build the wall. That's why we have to plug it with Leviathans. It would be impossible to do anything else because we just simply don't have the funds.
Yeah, we've only got the funds for Big Gun. Really just Big Gun. You saw what happened to that other state that we just kind of let the grass take over. We couldn't do anything about it.
Right.
So, Big Gun. Big Gun's all we got. Sorry, guys. Yeah, I think that this has to be the case because I agree with you. The Leviathans look horrifying. Okay, human face.
Sure.
That's just like going crazy. Not good. Not good. Okay. I will also say though, Luke, this is gonna build on your theory. Actually, oh no. Luke, we're building on your theory now.
Okay. Good.
The Empire is not taking advantage of a naturally occurring phenomenon with the Leviathans. The Empire is creating the Leviathans.
Ooh.
Do you remember? They've told us a couple of times in this text about these other augmented creatures that never die but keep growing.
Yes.
These are people that they've augmented that never die but keep getting bigger and bigger.
I like this.
And what did we hear about the Leviathans? They seem to keep growing in size every year.
Yeah.
That's what this is.
It does feel like it. There's also a little hint kind of at the end here where I forget his name, but the captain who Din has a relationship with at the end is the one that like is part of, one of the ones that shoots the cannon.
Yeah.
And Din is like, it looked like the mouth was like trying to say something at the end.
Yeah. Yeah. Captain Stovey, I think, was his name.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he was like, no, don't worry about that. We don't listen.
Yeah.
Don't listen to it.
Something's going on there.
So I think that the Empire is manufacturing this crisis to keep the people in the third ring oppressed. Because Luke, I don't know if you know this about circles, but the area gets bigger as you go out from the circle.
I've heard that.
So there's a lot more people in that third ring than in the inner rings.
Right.
Mm. Got to keep them down somehow.
That's true. Oh, man. That's crazy.
That is crazy. But plausible, Luke, I'd say.
It is plausible. It also, like, I had a note at the very end. I know we're kind of jumping there, but
yeah,
it's relevant
right
here.
Yeah.
Where Anna asks Din what he thinks of the Empire, like what he thinks it is.
Yeah.
And she, I forget if it's her or him, says that, like, the Empire seems really unstable.
Mm-hmm.
Like, based on their experiences in this book, seems really unstable and, like, like a house of cards almost.
Yeah.
And I don't get that impression at all.
No. I mean,
like,
especially considering, Luke, the crisis in this was one wall being breached.
Right.
You have three more walls, from what I remember.
Well, it's that, and then they're kind of referencing, I think, the like machinations of the nobility.
Yeah.
But even that, it's like, it didn't seem to actually pose a threat to the Empire.
No. It was like one clan destroying one state. Come on. We've all done it. Happens all the time.
Anyway, I don't get the sense that this Empire is quite as fragile as everyone seems to think.
I agree with you. I think this is propaganda coming from the Emperor.
Yeah. Okay, you wanna come back a little bit earlier and maybe go smaller in notes?
Yeah, let's go back earlier and smaller.
Okay. So, this is going to be a stupid one, but when Din is in the house of the hot, what, the rich people, Hazas, is that what it is?
Yeah.
He gets almost manipulated by the woman who smells really good.
Yeah.
And I have to say, we like, I feel like I occasionally will read about this, this whole like augmented pheromone stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not believing this ever. Okay. When people try to tell me that pheromones are real, I'm not buying it.
Why is that, Luke? Why is that?
What are you talking about? What are you talking about? Someone just smells so good that you're like lose all control.
You're like, uh-oh, Boner Town. I'm at Boner Town
now.
How
could that be? That's not a real thing.
I think, Luke, you're right. It's not a real thing. Because think of how big the industry for like boner pills is.
Yeah.
If you could just smell something, it would be like, yeah, of course I'll take that rather than like a pill to do yeah. that. Just give me the essential oils. Give me the boner oil. And I'll just huff that before I...
People say this in our world where it's like, oh, like this person just has like really strong pheromones or something like that. No, I don't have any evidence to support this, but that's just not true. I'm sorry. No one is like subtly... This is not like some subtle love potion that actually exists in the real world.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, Luke, okay, here's the deal though. Because... Now, we're going to get into territory. Normally, Luke, we're chemists, right?
Yeah.
We're getting into biology here now and a little bit of neuroscience. But from what I remember reading, there are like scent markers in people's sweat that like, I can't remember what the experiments are, but that like, maybe they... Okay, here's what I remember. They did, like, a test on, like, married couples with their, like, sweat glands or whatever. And there was, like, an indication of, like, immunosymbiosis, where, like, the immune system of your partner tended to complement your immune system so that your potential offspring would have, like, better immunity to disease. This... Okay, I will say this knowledge, I don't know where it comes from, and it's very old.
I have heard
old.
This too.
Okay,
I have heard this too, and I'm telling you now that I have not looked into it since then, but that's nonsense. Okay,
wow.
There's a lot of like science that is very embedded in our cultural understanding of the world
yeah.
that is untrue.
Okay, I'm
pulling this out of my ass here, okay? Because I have not done any research on this, okay? But no, just think about this for a second, because
okay.
that's not true.
Okay.
That's not true.
What? How do you know?
How could that be, Dan?
Luke, there is...
Okay. Like, of all the factors that, like, you think that us as humans are genuinely being impacted... buy this that way? I'll buy it for bees, okay? Give me like if you're like this insect with two brain cells
okay.
is affected by this, I'll believe you, okay?
Wow. Wow, Luke. Okay. Luke believes he's way more in control of his own actions and thoughts than he actually is.
I think that there are a lot of factors that impact who you end up with as a mate.
Yeah.
And near the bottom.
Whoa.
Near the very bottom is like the chemistry of your sweat. Okay. That cannot be a significant factor in any way.
Oh, I love this for Luke. I love this for Luke because he's given himself a homework project. And that is next episode, he needs to come with some facts for us.
Yeah.
Luke, this isn't the Joe Rogan experience, okay? Next time you need to come with like research about this. That's what I'm requiring for you to do as your homework.
Okay. Okay, I'll give it a shot.
Because I don't know if this is true or not. I'm willing to admit that I'm not an expert, and maybe it does matter. Maybe.
It can't.
Maybe there's something to it. Listen, Luke, there's all kinds of crazy shit that's real, okay?
Yeah, yeah.
So I think this might be real. And I need you, now you've given yourself a homework lesson. While you're doing that, I just want to talk about how we love a Titan's Bone sword. Can we talk about that for just a second? We love dope swords.
Always, if your sword has some cool stuff going on, I'm here for it.
Sorry, this sword has like a special lock in the scabbard, and when you pull it out, it's actually the bone of a Titan. This is incredible.
Okay, I want to do two things here, because one, the sword's awesome.
Yes.
Love the sword.
Yes.
The scabbard, I'm less keen on.
Well, okay, come on. What's wrong with it?
The cool lock? I have to pull this thing out. I have to pull this thing out. Like, when I'm going to fight, right? Yeah. Maybe I need to do it quickly.
Yeah.
Oh, shoot. I messed up step 13 out of 50, and now I'm stabbed. Okay? Like, okay. I would rather have a good sword that I can get out of my scabbard easily. Me with my extensive experience.
Mm-hmm.
Don't give me this lock. Give me a different lock, okay?
I see what you're saying.
Tie it to my pheromones.
Okay. All right. Luke, I think that this is really interesting because I think that for some reason in this world, they have chosen locking mechanisms that are all very easy for engravers to crack.
Right, yeah.
And I don't know why when they know engravers exist. Do you know what I mean? Like the safe in that lady's... Yeah. House is like, oh, he can't look at it, otherwise he'll figure out how to get in. And like the same thing with this sword is, it's like, if you, I guess they have to teach him how to do it, right?
Well, okay, I'll push back a little bit on this, because like this is very similar to a password, right? And the important thing about a password, Dan, is that you can't tell people what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in this word, in this world, they seem to be very comfortable. Like, this would be like this lady unlocking her safe in front of engravers would be like me typing, me like verbally saying my password, doing like voice dictating my password to my computer with another person in the room.
That's a great point.
Do it.
This is a great point.
You have
Luke.
To hide it. That's the only thing that works. The point of making it complicated is so that people can't guess it. It's not so that people who have been told it can't physically do it.
Okay, yeah, you're right. You're right here. But Luke, the swords are so dope and scary, they have to be locked in a very particular way. Yeah, maybe just a secret button. Maybe like one secret button is all you need.
Yeah.
You don't need a big complicated thing. You just need one secret button to push.
Well, I think it's like at a certain point, like you have to be comfortable with people taking it. Like if the lock of it makes it unusable, basically.
Yeah.
Which I realize that they say that he can get it out like very quickly. I don't know.
Yeah. Not quicker than a person without that. Right.
Yeah.
Not quicker than a person who already has their sword out and is charging at you. That's, you're already behind.
Yeah. The sword rocks, though.
The sword's so cool. I mean, I do wish it had more, like, powers and shit. Like, you know, they don't really talk about its powers.
Yeah. But like, it's enchantments, you mean?
Yeah, it's enchantments. I mean, it gives off this, like, green mist, which is dope.
Yeah.
But I want to know more about the powers that it has and enchantments that it's got.
Right, because right now it's, like, lighter and stronger.
Yeah.
Which is great.
Yeah. But I want to know.
Well, I guess it also strikes fear in the hearts of his enemies.
Yes,
as well.
That I want to know how much lifesteal damage it does.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, love a Titan's Bone sword. Way better use of it than just like home decor. Because Luke, you asked in the last episode, you were like, are people putting plants out as home decor? And it's like, no, they're not. Actually, what they're doing is they're putting the corpses of dead leviathans in their house.
Right.
Still cool, I will say. Pretty. That's got some significant aura to it.
It does, yeah. But it only fits a certain kind of room.
Yeah. Usually a big one.
A big one, but also, like, not a room that people really live in.
Mm.
Like, I can't put that in my one-bedroom apartment because it'd be like, what's this for? But you can put it in, like, a stately room that, like, important meetings happen in.
Which, if you have a one-bedroom apartment, is, you know, probably one room that you got for that. So maybe you do put it in there.
Maybe you do. Okay. Okay. I'll take it into consideration if I ever stumble across one.
Mm-hmm. Well, no, Luke, don't do that. Come on. We've already figured out what you're supposed to do with it. You need to turn it into a sword.
Into various types of weapons.
Yes.
I don't want to limit myself to just swords.
Okay, we're going to have that conversation off air then, because you're making a mistake.
That's too long. We'll go over time if we do that.
Yeah.
Can we talk about twitches?
Yeah, let's definitely do it.
So twitches, I'm really into the idea of, which is basically they've been augmented to be, I'm going to call it like have explosiveness.
Yeah. I think that's how they describe it.
Like
yeah.
that kind of athleticism basically.
Yeah.
But it's really hard on the joints and that kind of thing. So you can only do it for a short time. And I think they tend to not live very long.
Yeah. They tend to burn out quick. Yep.
Yes. But they are basically unbeatable for about a minute is what they say.
Mm-hmm.
I'm into it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I do have some notes as to, like, this makes people in this world say that twitches are really good for assassinations.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, this one is a very good assassin.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't see why the twitch skill set has been relevant for the assassin. Like, they can punch... They can do this way of killing people where they punch a really small hole in the skull.
Mm-hmm.
But if anything, that just made it easier for them to find out who it was. Like,
oh, I see. Okay, like, Luke,
I don't know why this assassin had to be a twitch.
I think that we're conflating two things, right? The first is the capacity to actually kill someone and assassinate them. And the second is the ability for them to be discovered.
Yeah,
because you're right. Very obvious who did this. It's gotta be a twitch. But I think for that twitch, for that like assassin to be able to just like practically assassinate someone, I think the twitch skills are very helpful. Like they can
they can like jump up into a two-story building or something.
Jump up really high, get in really quick, and like kill somebody before they even really know what's going on. Like they're moving so fast. It's hard for Din to even, like, see their movements.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, yeah, okay. I'm not able to stop this guy if he's coming at me. I'm getting assassinated.
Sure. Okay.
Does everybody know who did it? Yeah, of course they do, but I'm still dead.
Okay, I think this is a fair tweak here, where they're very good assassins.
Yeah.
Like, if you just want someone dead.
Yeah.
And you... don't care about like whether it is done sneakily, then yeah, twitches are the way to go.
Twitches are really good. I also think, Luke, since we're talking about the dark side of these different abilities, engravers are like the perfect false witnesses, right?
Mm. Yeah.
Because
you mean if they just lie?
Yeah. If an engraver is just like, yeah, I saw him kill that guy. I've got it really perfectly visualized in my brain right now. Trust me on this one. Hold on, let me sniff this. Oh yeah, he definitely killed him. I saw it. It's like, because their word is considered like factually accurate. Like in a court of law, if an engraver says something happened, they're like, oh wow, that's crazy. Okay.
Right. Right.
So you don't even have to be a real engraver, because in this scene we saw somebody pretend to be an Axiom.
Yeah.
And they got away with it for too long, frankly. They couldn't add like two-digit numbers together. Meanwhile, like they're walking around pretending to be an Axiom.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ugh. So yeah, just
this
like
is true.
Just lie. This, Din.
This goes back to our point from a couple episodes ago that lying is OP.
It's too good. It's way too good. And the other thing about this assassin issue. So at one point, Din and Anna are talking after he gets back from the Haza estate. Mm-hmm. And Anna's like, we got to figure out where this assassin is. And Din's like, there was an assassin there the whole time and you didn't even tell me? And he's like really shook by this.
Yeah.
Din, it doesn't matter if there was an assassin or not. If they wanted to kill you, they could have just stabbed, like any of those people could have stabbed you at any point. Mm. Like you were already in potentially mortal danger because there were a bunch of guards with swords and they would have done whatever the Haza clan told them to do. So the point isn't that they could have killed you really easily. The point is that your dead body would have caused a lot of problems for them. So it wasn't an issue of how they could do it. It was just if they would do it or not.
Right. And a lot of the time, like, if someone wants to kill you and is willing to suffer the consequences of killing you,
yeah,
they're probably going to succeed.
Correct.
It's really hard to prevent that, actually.
Yeah, it turns out.
So the main factor is just their willingness to actually do the deed.
Right. The thing that was protecting you, Din, wasn't that they didn't have an assassin. It was that it would have been really obvious if you died in their estate.
Yeah. Man. A weird time in this estate, though.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I made a note last episode complaining about the explanation for why Din is so good at fighting.
Yeah.
I do appreciate that this was updated.
Yep.
And that it's because he has really good like muscle memory.
Mm-hmm.
So that's cool. Mm-hmm. I will say, like, probably is it as like they seem to think it's really overpowered.
The muscle memory thing?
Yeah.
I mean, it definitely has a lot of perks to it.
Yes.
I think his nerf brings it down into reasonable territory here.
Sure. Okay, but my note here is that, like, he can remember how to do things exactly.
Mm-hmm.
To the point of where, like, if he learns a way to block a sword, the sword has to be coming to him in the literal exact same angle and way.
I mean,
as the way that he learned it, right?
So, I mean, you can learn sword moves that block a range of attacks, right? Like, it doesn't have to.
Yes, but that's not. But that's not the muscle, the exact muscle memory thing.
No. But Luke, the muscle memory thing is where to put his sword, not where the sword that's attacking him is coming from.
Okay. Yes.
And so he knows how to manipulate his sword, and there's probably a range of like acceptable incoming sword attacks that would be countered by this specific move, right?
Yes. Okay. Here's my note, though. I think.
Okay.
Is it's twofold. One is that I think the training for this needs to be different from normal training.
Yes.
And I think that if someone else knows that you have this muscle memory thing, I think they can counter it by doing like convincing.
They can fake you out. They can faint.
They can fake you out much easier because like you haven't learned to, well, you have to learn you have to predict. You can't like instinctually react.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Especially considering like, this is why you can't win at chess by just memorizing all the possible chess moves, because you would have to go through every single scenario to actually know exactly what move to play. And there's just too many. Even to like physically go through all the moves would take you like a billion years or whatever. So
right,
it's the same problem here of like, yeah, you can learn the basics, but like you have to actually practice fighting.
Yeah.
Luke, it does mean you're an amazing musician, though.
Yes.
This is the place that we really need to lean into, because you can literally play anything with just like one day of practice.
Right.
Which is incredible. Yeah. And which makes the other guy who had this ability really tragic for him. I will say, though, I feel like his nerf was way less severe than Din's nerf, because Din can't read, which is a huge issue for him.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas our other guy...
In just everyday life as well.
Yeah.
That's his job.
Yeah, our other guy just can't sing, which doesn't seem like it would come up that often. Honestly. Literally, actually, we haven't really even seen many songs or instances of music in this whole book.
Right.
Whereas reading seems to be a common skill.
Yeah, yeah. And I agree with you that his nerf is... I do like that they're not, like, connected necessarily.
Yeah.
But it is a tough... It's a tough trade-off. I'm not sure if I'm taking it.
Yeah.
Probably not taking it.
It is tough. It is tough.
I do think there's a lot of things that this makes you really good at. Basketball, so good at.
Free throws? Come on, you're never missing a free throw.
Never missing.
Yeah. This is the same issue, though, where you have to practice a lot of jumpers. Although, actually, Luke, you're
way less than a normal person. You just have to practice one from each spot.
This is so true. You could in an afternoon, you could just step to every location on the court and take a shot, and damn. Yeah.
Well, okay, hang on, because the problem is you have to make it.
Sure.
And then you like that's the correct
you save that one
to take.
But yeah. I feel like, Luke, this is a activity for one day. In a single day, you could dominate the court.
Yeah.
From any point on the court, too. We're talking full court. You literally can't give this person the ball because they will score from anywhere.
Right.
This is incredible, actually.
Yeah. Yeah, so good at basketball.
Good at basketball. Golf is probably another really good one.
Golf, well, they'd be really good at their specific spot.
Sure, but it's not like they change the courses like a ton. Just go to the course like a week before, play it.
Yeah. Or you could be like, I know this swing gets me 300 yards in this direction.
Right. Then it becomes just a video game.
Yeah. Yeah. Good at a lot of things that where like the other person doesn't really have much of a say in what you do.
Correct. You know? Turns out fighting maybe not the best use of this skill.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, but yeah, definitely music. Playing an instrument, playing all the instruments.
Mm-hmm. Be great at it.
Luke, can we talk about the sort of last reveal that happens, where it turns out that I think Uhad is the final poisoner.
Yeah.
So Anna is pissed at Uhad for what he did. And so big picture here, right? Uhad is claiming that he was just so sick of the Hazas getting away with everything that he wanted to like finally get some justice on them. And Anna's pissed because at one point I think she says something to the effect of like, I was here already looking into them and like I was gonna catch them for doing some dumb shit, and then you walked in and now you're in trouble too. Like, this isn't how this works. Like, you fucked it up, essentially.
Yeah.
Did he though? I feel like the whole reason why she was able to catch the Hazas was because of this thing that he did.
Yeah.
Like, if he hadn't have started this poisoning campaign, none of the intel about what they did with the Dapple glass or any of this would have come out, because there would have been no investigation into them, right?
Right. It seems like they basically... I don't know if we actually get details on who Anna is necessarily.
Yeah.
But someone very high up, maybe the emperor himself or something, was like, Anna, you need to go find something going on with the Hazas, basically.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
And they're just like, go out there and find something, I guess.
Yep.
Because they're doing stuff that we need them to stop doing. But there is like no idea of what that would be.
Right. They're getting too powerful and they're definitely doing bad shit, because if you're that powerful, of course you are.
Right. And then, yes, Uhad's thing, like, they had already done the bad stuff, but Uhad's thing, like, actually kind of helped Anna figure it out.
And, like, make it come to light, too, because even if you'd already figured it out, like, the evidence wasn't there.
Right.
Now you have all the evidence.
Right. I don't know. I actually was a little bit weirded out by how mad she gets about this.
Especially considering, Luke, she's... After this, she specifically tells Din she wanted him because he was willing to do illegal shit.
This was my note. Yeah, like, she says that she was super interested because he showed that he was willing to bend the rules and break the rules.
Yeah.
And, like, Uhad's stuff is, like, the natural continuation of that, I feel.
Right, 100%. Uhad is out here doing, like, the Punisher and, like, getting justice on these people, like extrajudicial justice for real crimes that all of these people have done. Granted, he did have some like collateral damage, which isn't great. But the like motivation, his motivation, I feel like you can't knock if you're going to also be like, Din, I know you cheated and I actually love it.
Right. You have to either believe in the rules or not.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no rules for thee, but not for me. You can't do that.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm glad you were weirded out by that too. It just felt like super hypocritical for Anna to say to him.
Yeah.
Especially when it's like, and we're gonna kill you for it. So I think you're a bad person and you deserve to die.
Right. Like, rude. I understand why you would be annoyed, because it through a complete accident like affected the wall.
Yes.
But like, you would be mad at him for that, for like not doing it correctly.
Right. Right. But like, you gotta admire.
And also, that wasn't even really him, right? Like,
right.
He just wanted to kill them in some way.
Yeah. True.
Yeah. It's weird.
Yeah.
Who is Anna? Just, she's high up.
Is Anna the Emperor?
Honestly, I thought that was about to be a reveal, like, genuinely. But I don't think so.
Yeah, I don't think so either. But clearly she's, like, the secret CIA director or whatever, like, top of whatever spy agency is keeping the Empire running.
Right.
Yeah. I don't know, Luke. Okay, Luke.
Okay.
Let's talk reviews. Because speaking of like finding out what Anna's up to, I had a great time with this book. I thought this was super fun. I loved the locked door reveal scene. Very like classic murder mystery, sort of a moment here at the end. I really like the world that we're in. I think the world building is really cool. I liked the characters here. I really liked Anna and Din's dynamic. I had a great time. I had a great time with this book. And yeah, I'm curious to hear what you thought of it.
Honestly, same thing. I don't think that I really have any even critiques. Like classic. I do love how murder mysteries like stick to like reference each other or like reference the genre basically by these like reveal scenes.
Yeah.
And it was nice to get one that was in like a more fantasy, like different world.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, I'm all positive about this one. I had a great time.
Well that's great news, Luke, because, you know, at a certain point, I think we will return to this series. It is a series.
And it is? Oh, I actually had no idea.
Yes, so there's a second book, and I've heard from a reliable source that the second book might be even better than the first.
Wow, okay.
So, I think at some point, Luke, we will be returning to the Leviathan I think it's the Leviathan series. And see, maybe we'll find out what Anna's up to. But not next week, Luke.
No. Yeah, next week we are moving on. Doing a little sci-fi. So next week we're going to start reading The Long Way to a Small Angry Planet by Becky Chambers.
That's right, Luke. I think we're doing thirds for this guy.
I believe so, yes.
So first third for next week, we'll bring the hot takes.